flames turned blue. He'd found his niche, though. He made green glass paperweights by the dozen and actually sold some at a gallery in Fairhope. Less than a year after Robert left, I got another note, this time from Annabelle. I wondered if she still fit into that tight Mardi Gras dress. She wrote to tell me Robert had died at her house in Tennessee. She heard him yell out in his dreams, which wasn't unusual, so she shushed him and went back to sleep. In the morning, he was dead. As his wife, I was asked to write his obituary. His parents tried to change my words, but I'd already sent it to the newspaper to be printed by the time they read the proof. Mr. Van Buren died in the arms of his lover, Annabelle Whitaker, in Tennessee. His wife, Mags, can now rest in peace. Chapter 31, Sarah, July. As the days went on, I dug through drawers and closets, cleaning out forgotten cardboard boxes, duffel bags, and file folders. Drywall dust, paint thinner, and wood polish swirled around me to create a headache-inducing fog, but I kept searching for anything that held meaning. Someone had saved stacks of newspapers and crates of plastic egg cartons, but I didn't care about those. I wanted to find things that would show me more of who Mags had been. While sorting through the drawers of an old roll-top desk in the parlor, I found a thin photo book in the back of the bottom drawer. When I pulled it out, a portion of the back page disintegrated in my hands. The swirly vintage script on the front read, "Picture-wise Vantone prints are better." A sticker on the back said, "Man's Photo Supply, the Gulf Coast Top Photo Finishers." The photos showed random people in various states of work and relaxation. Each black and white photo bore a date stamped along the white edge, June 1960. And a handwritten name. There was a young and handsome Mr. Norman standing next to a rock-faced furnace built into the grassy slope next to the house. He held a long tube into the fire with a clear bulb of glass attached to the end, the flames just reaching the bottom of the bulb. Nella sat in what appeared to be her bra and sturdy underwear out on the dock. A bottle of Johnson's baby oil next to her on the chaise. Daisy stood before an easel in what I recognized to be the front parlor, her paintbrush poised over the canvas. Several pages of the book had been torn out, leaving just jagged edges behind. Who had filled those pages? And what moments from the hideaway's past were captured in those photos, now forgotten forever? As I stood to place the book into my shoebox of items to keep, two photos fell to the ground. I leaned down to retrieve them and crouched back on my heels to look closer. The first one showed a man standing on a beach, the shoreline just visible at the edge of the frame. I'd seen one photo of Robert in my life, and this was not him. Robert had been young in the photo, clean-cut, dressed in a serious suit, and carrying a briefcase. This man had shoulder-length light hair that looked damp at the ends. He wore blue jeans and an unbuttoned plaid shirt. I felt sure I was looking at the face of William, my real grandfather. With his eyes closed and his mouth just barely open, he seemed to be caught in that moment just before laughter takes over. I brushed my fingers over the photo, trying to find bits of me in his face. A wave of longing pulsed through my chest. The second photo was similar to the funeral photo of Mags that Dot had placed next to the casket. It had the same huge moss-draped oaks in the background, and she wore the same button-down shirt, one tail hanging free. Her eyes were still crinkled in happiness, but her angle was different. In this photo, she didn't hold her hand up toward the camera as she had in the photo at the funeral. She crossed her arms lazily in front of her body, and her stance was confident, flirtatious even. I held the two photos next to each other. Even though the images were gray and blurred with age, their faces spoke of love and desire. The front door opened, and Dot and Glory's animated conversation filled the house. Glory walked past the living room toward the kitchen without seeing me, but Dot paused in the doorway. Finding anything interesting in here? I held up the two photos. She walked closer and peered over my shoulder at them, then fumbled a hand on top of her head, searching for her glasses. Never have 'em when I need 'em, she said under her breath. She took the photo of Mags and held it out at arm's length. This one I've seen, or at least one like it. She tilted the photo to look at the date. A little 3x5 of Mag smiling. This same unbelievable smile was in the junk drawer in the kitchen for as long as I can remember. Whenever I'd asked Mags about it, she'd just say it was a long-ago happy day. That's why I wanted to use it at the funeral. I didn't know there was another photo from that same day. Now this. She took the second photo. I'm guessing this is William. I've never seen a picture of him. She rubbed her thumb over William's face. I can see why she was so smitten. I stood and stretched my sore legs. Dot patted my shoulder and moved back toward the hallway, then stopped. I know I told you a lot the other day, William and Robert and all. Are you disappointed? Do you wish I hadn't told you? No, I'm glad you told me. It was shocking and still is, but I'm glad to know the truth, or at least parts of it. Good. I was so worried I'd ruin the picture you had in your mind of who Mags was. Well, you did, but the picture I had in mind wasn't the right one. I'd rather know the truth than forever think she was just a woman who liked to wear caftans and weird hats and poke fun at the neighbors. She was all those things, Dot said. But it was just her armor. Underneath, she was tender. Not as unbreakable as everyone thought. But why did she keep it all such a secret? You know how most women tend to talk a lot about feelings and emotions? I nodded. Mags wasn't that kind of woman. I was her best friend, and she didn't even give me all the details. She told me a little, but I had to string most of it together as best I could. I think it was too hard for her to talk much about William. She paused for a minute. William's shadow followed her all those years. She never fully admitted it, but I could see it. Even as an older woman, his presence was still very much a part of her. Those nights she'd sit in the garden. Oh, yes. William made her that bench. He made a lot of the pieces in this house. I'm not exactly sure which pieces, but I know he made some of them. She squeezed my hand. I'm not sure I answered any of your questions. You did. Thank you. She padded away to the kitchen, leaving me in the parlor with the photos in my hand. I placed the photo book in the shoebox, but stuck the two loose photos in my back pocket. Those were staying with me. I continued my rummaging that afternoon. In the downstairs coat closet, I found a black leather jacket with laces on the arms and braided tassels hanging off the bottom. It had been pushed all the way to the back for who knows how long, hidden by more useful raincoats and light winter jackets. Alan would snag something like this from a cluttered vintage shop and wear it until it fell apart. I laid the jacket across the back of the couch and picked up my phone. He answered on the first ring. "Bits and pieces, how may I help you?" "It's me." "Hello, you." I could hear the smile in his voice. "Checking up on me?" "Nope, just calling to check in. I'm following your orders." "We're doing fine. I got that order of linen pillows we ordered months ago. They got a piece of my mind, and we got a 10% discount on our next order." "Good for you. Go ahead and call. I'm all over it. Mrs. McMurphy has already picked them up. I can't talk long, but fill me in. How's it going with Mr. Sexy?" "It's Crawford, and he's wonderful." I couldn't say it without smiling. "Mm-hmm. I know that voice. You're happy." "So what? I'm always happy." "Not like this, you're not. So, you two have been out again?" "We're not exactly going out. He's just spending a lot of time at the house after work." "You scandalous woman, sneaking around with the boss after hours." "He's not my boss. I hired him." "Even better, sneaking around with a hired hand. I love it." "Alan, I love you, but you're making this sound dirty." "Of course I am. I'm happy you found someone. Now don't screw it up. And before you get all testy, I just mean don't let your head get into the game too much. That's when you start to back off. Let it go and see what happens. That's my plan. I could hear commotion in the background, so I hurried. I found some of Mag's things in the house as I've been cleaning out. What kind? Oh, hang on a sec. I waited while Alan answered a customer's question. I could hear the soft hum of voices in the shop, the tinkling of Alan's music of the day coming from the speakers. Things were just fine, as he'd said. I need to run, he said when he picked up the phone. Barb here is interested in the sofa. The sofa? I asked. Over the winter, I'd refinished a Victorian-style sofa from the 1800s with curved walnut arms and a tufted back. It was in mint condition and the most expensive item in the shop. That's the one. I'll let you know how it goes, but I do want to hear about Mags. We'll talk soon. With a click, he was gone. I put the phone down on the desk and sighed. My presence at Bits and Pieces wasn't as necessary as I thought. Everything was running like clockwork, even in my absence. Chapter 32, Sarah, July. I had just sat down on the front porch after dragging a trash can to the road when a car approached. The small blue sedan came to a stop in the middle of the driveway. I couldn't see the driver's face through the shadows of the trees overhead. The man who eased out of the car had a full head of thick white hair under a plaid cap, and he stretched each leg out in front of him as if relieving them of stiffness. I'd seen that same white hair and plaid cap in my rearview mirror when I drove away from Mag's grave. When the man stepped away from his car and turned toward me, I knew this was William. He shuffled to the bottom of the porch steps. I would have spoken first had my brain not been so empty of words. My heart thudded when he finally spoke. My name is William Cartwright. I'm looking for, well, I'm not sure what. I'm Sarah Jenkins. This is the hideaway. He nodded and looked up at the house. I couldn't forget this place, he said, before turning to me again. I knew Margaret Van Buren. It was a long time ago. I read her obituary in the newspaper. It took me a while to get up the nerve to come back here. He ran a hand across his stubbly cheek. It was hard to speak over the lump in my throat, full of both affection and sadness. I'm her granddaughter. My voice broke, but he was so caught in his memory, I wasn't sure if he noticed. I swiped my finger under my eyes. He offered a small smile. I thought you might be. You look a lot like she did. The paper said her one survivor was a granddaughter, but I didn't think I'd have the luck to run into you. I don't mean to be presumptuous, but would you have a few minutes to talk to me? I gestured to the rocking chair next to me, and William began the climb up the steps. When he settled into a chair, he took a deep breath and seemed to relax a little. I couldn't take my eyes off him. Even in his old age, it was obvious he had been handsome once. He had an angular jaw and chocolate brown eyes framed by still full lashes. I tried to imagine him with hair to his shoulders, as it had been in the photo of him at the cove. His hands, large, dotted in age spots, and mottled with purple veins, pulled at the zipper of his jacket. They were strong, useful hands. "Thank you for talking to me. You probably haven't even heard my name." William ran his hand over a small band-aid on his chin. A dot of blood showed through the bandage right in the center, as if he'd nicked himself shaving. "I have," I said quietly. I didn't know how much to tell, so I went with the truth. "I found a note you wrote to Mags." He raised his eyebrows and gave a slow nod, but didn't speak. It was in pieces in a box with some old photos and a few other things. I didn't understand what it meant. I still don't, really, but I've been piecing bits together. Mag's best friend Dot still lives here. She's told me what she knows. I wasn't ready to mention the biggest fact I'd discovered, that William was my grandfather. It was still outlandish to me, and I suspected it would be even more so to him if he didn't know, and according to Dot, he didn't. "Then maybe you can tell me a little of what I've missed," he said. "Again, if I'm not asking too much. I know she must have had a full life after I left. She has a granddaughter, after all," he smiled. So life must have treated her well. I don't want to pry, but I've always been so curious. It's okay. She lived here until the very end. She was always surrounded by friends. The ones who live here now lived with her for years. The house made her happy. I think she had a good life,
despite the fact that you left her heartbroken and pregnant.
I couldn't argue the facts, but this gentleman didn't seem like the kind of person who would have done that. I wanted answers, but I didn't know how to venture into those waters. Turns out I didn't have to. William dove right in. I came back a year or two after I moved out. He took his cap off and placed it in his lap. I saw her sitting at the table where I first spoke to her, a fussy little wrought iron table Mrs. DeBerry left behind, and she was laughing. A man was swinging a little girl around in a circle in the grass. When he put her down, she ran and threw her arms around Maggie's neck. William paused. I knew it had to be her husband, and the little girl was theirs. I couldn't bring myself to barge in, especially not when I saw the girl. I suppose that was your mom? I nodded, even though he didn't have the story right. Why did you leave? The question tumbled out before I had a chance to censor myself. The first time, I mean. Where did you go? He shifted in his chair and recrossed his legs. I'm sorry. Maybe I shouldn't have asked you that. Yes, you should have. I knew coming here that if I wanted answers about Maggie, I'd likely have to answer for what I did. He slid his hands up and down the arms of the rocking chair. Maggie's father showed up at the hideaway soon after she took over the house. I was looking for her when I overheard them on the back porch. Her dad was scolding her about staying here instead of being back home with her husband. He stopped and looked at me. Forgive me. I don't know how much you know, and I don't want to be the one to... Well, I don't want to change your view of your grandmother. It's all right. I know about you and Mags. Some of it, at least. I need to know the rest. He nodded. We fell for each other quickly. I knew what we were doing. All I had planned for us was wrong, but I couldn't help myself. That is, until I heard her talking to her father. I realized then that he was right. And you just gave up? If you really loved each other, couldn't you have made it work somehow? Not then, we couldn't. I saw exactly what I was up against. Who was I to be carrying on with another man's wife and trying to plan a future with her? Aside from the fact that what we were doing was wrong, I was nobody. I couldn't pay to put gas in my truck half the time, and her husband was a wealthy socialite with a steady job. Maggie was used to nice things, even if she had turned her back on her old life. I wasn't sure she'd really thought of what it would mean to stick with me and turn down a life of money and ease. I knew I had to get myself together and make a real plan before expecting her to stick with me. I thought of Mag sitting on her bench crying to Dot, missing William. I shook my head. Knowing Mag's and who she turned out to be, she probably wouldn't have cared about the money. You have no idea how many nights I've laid awake thinking that same thing. I made a mistake leaving like I did, but I always planned to come back for her. I thought I'd spend some time away, make a decent amount of money, and then return to whisk her away like a knight in shining armor, he chuckled. What happened? I came back a few weeks after I left. I'd wanted to give her time to settle things with her parents and her husband, but it was so hard for me to stay away. I stopped at Grimerson's first to pick up some flowers. I'd made some furniture for Tom, and he knew Maggie and I were, well, together. He sold me the flowers, but advised against taking them to her. He told me her husband had moved in. I didn't go see her that day, but I was just young and headstrong enough to not give up. He shook his head. I did stay away for a while then. I worked hard, made some money, and I came back again. But I guess I waited too long. When I saw them in the backyard, I didn't have the nerve to wreck what she'd built with Robert and their little girl. My heart caved inside of me. I closed my eyes and worked the tension out of my forehead with my fingers. I wanted to tell him the truth about that little girl, my mother, but I couldn't. Not yet. I didn't see any mention of Robert in her obituary, he continued. Did they stay together?
He died of a heart attack when Mom was just a few years old, but I don't think... I paused, unsure of how much to explain. I think their situation was complicated.
I see, he said quietly.
You don't seem surprised, he shrugged. I just worried about her is all. He'd already left her once. Seems a lot of people left her.
The only ones who stuck by her are the ones who still live here.
So she never remarried?
There was never anyone else.
We rocked in silence for a few moments.
What about you? I asked. Did you ever get married?
He nodded. Twice.
I raised my eyebrows.
I tried to forget her, but no one could ever measure up. In their defense, they were good women. Both times it was my fault it didn't work. I compared everyone to Maggie. I was 28 when she arrived here with a red coat draped over her arm. She was stunning. I've been in love with her ever since. In the photo of Mags at the funeral and the other one I'd found in the desk, she'd had such a radiant smile. Her hair was messy and free, and even the sand and sky around her seemed ripe with life. William had been the man to make her so happy. He'd been her heart and soul. Regardless of how he and Mags had ended, I felt a sudden closeness to him, an appreciation that he'd drawn so much life and joy out of her, even if I never got to see that side of her.
I've taken up enough of your time, he straightened in his chair. I appreciate you talking to me.
I'm glad you came.
I wanted to say more, but it was still a little strange to be sitting next to my grandfather. One, he wasn't named Robert, and two, he wasn't dead. But despite the oddity of the situation, we had an undeniable connection, and I wanted to know more about him. He rose from his chair and began the walk back to his car. I stood and walked to the top of the steps.
Would you mind if I called you? Maybe we could meet again.
He smiled. I'd like that.
I put a hand on the door behind me. I'm going to get some paper and a pen. Don't go anywhere.
He chuckled and stopped on the bottom porch step.
Don't worry. I'll stick around this time.
I sat in the rocker, watching the taillights on William's car disappear in the trees. Not a minute later, the front door opened, and Dot's gray head popped out.
Is your friend gone?
He is, although he wasn't a friend.
Well, I wondered.
She sat in the chair William had just vacated. I didn't take you for a woman with gentleman collars as old as Bert.
Aren't you and Bert the same age?
She waved the thought away. Don't tell him that.
So who was the visitor?
It was William.
Her rocking chair creaked to a stop.
William?
I nodded. He saw the obituary in the paper. Remember me telling you I saw a man at the cemetery after everyone else left?
That was him.
The thought crossed my mind, but it seemed unlikely. It's been so many years.
We rocked in our chairs, each lost in our own thoughts. Around us, crickets practiced for their evening serenade, stretching their legs and testing instruments.
What was he like? She asked.
Amazingly still love-struck.
He's been married twice, but he's still in love with her, or at least who she used to be.
It was sad to hear him talk that way about her, especially since she's not here to see him again.
Do you think she still loved him at the end?
She shrugged. On the one hand, Mags was a smart woman. I'd like to think she wouldn't have let her heart stay tied to a man she met in her early 20s, but the head and the heart rarely agree. A woman never fully forgets her first love, and I'd imagine that's especially true if she never finds love again, not to mention if she carried his child. I know she loved him, but I always had a hard time swallowing the fact that he left and never came back. I told her about William overhearing Mag's conversation with her father and how he planned to come back with the means to compete against Robert's wealth and status.
Then why didn't he? Mags would have gone back to him in a heartbeat, especially after Robert died.
That's the thing. He did come back, but he saw Mags and Robert in the backyard with a little girl, Mom, and he assumed it was Robert's and her child. He didn't want to disrupt their life or hurt the child.
My goodness. It's terrible, isn't it? It would have been so easy for them to be together again, but neither of them knew, I sighed.
I wish Mags hadn't held on to her secrets for so long.
I wish I had known all of this. I cradled my chin in my hand. I wish I'd known her. Chapter 33, Sarah, July. At the house, the construction team took out the wall dividing the kitchen and the dining room, and the one between the foyer and the main parlor. Even with everything covered in dust and plastic tarps, I could tell the decision to remove the walls was a good one. Despite the noise and dust, it was easier to breathe in the house with the rooms opened up. The new bathrooms upstairs were framed out, and the old ones were updated to include spa baths and separate showers. Major was the biggest fan of the new bathrooms. "Have you seen those bathtubs?" he asked Bert one morning over cowboy coffee on the back porch when the electricity had been temporarily turned off. "They're huge. I'm not too keen on men soaking in tubs, but these may change my mind." Downstairs, the kitchen floors went from yellowed tile to hardwood, and the counters from ugly linoleum to butcher block. I walked in the kitchen one day to find Bert leaning over the new counter, his ear an inch from the wood and his eyes closed. Major stood in the corner of the kitchen, just out of Bert's line of sight, doubled over in quiet laughter. I gave Major a stern look and walked over to Bert. "Bert," I whispered, "are you okay?" He straightened up and smoothed his hand across the surface. "I'm just fine. And Major, I see you over there laughing. I read that some butcher block comes from ancient trees, and if you listen hard enough, you can hear the sound of wind in the branches." Major couldn't contain himself any longer. "Ancient trees, wind in the branches. Did you forget to take your pills this morning?" He laughed and grabbed a dish towel off the counter to wipe his eyes under his glasses. "I'm not crazy," Bert said. "You know how you can hear the ocean in a seashell? It's the same thing." "I do know about the seashells," I said, hiding my own laughter. "And you may be right about some butcher block wood, but I ordered these from IKEA, so I don't think they're ancient. More like Swedish." "Sweden? I bet they have ancient trees there." I chose creamy white paint for the cabinets and a soothing pale gray for the walls throughout the rest of the house. It would make the spaces feel even larger and pop against the new white crown moldings. Everything was coming together just as I had imagined. My favorite change was in the center hallway, which had previously been lined with built-in bookshelves, making it seem slimmer than it was. I asked Crawford to rip them out, and what a change it made. The hallway was now 10 feet across, and when I opened the front and back porch doors, the breeze floated through the house like a cool whisper. I ended each day a hot, sweaty mess, but I was satisfied. Exhausted and bleary, but satisfied. It was early evening on such a day when a car pulled up in the driveway. I smiled. Crawford was coming over for dinner, and he must have decided to come early. The last of the workers would be out of the house soon, and he'd said we'd needed to celebrate my victory. "Victory?" I said, when he asked me about dinner. "The house is incredible. I may have coordinated the actual work, but it's all your plans. You made this house what it's becoming. Your phone is going to be ringing off the hook with people wanting to book their vacations when it's finished." "What vacations?" I asked. "No one even knows about this place anymore, other than the neighbors who probably don't care. You know how word spreads. Once it gets out that there's a fancy new bed and breakfast in Sweet Bay, they'll start coming. You haven't said it, but I think this is what you want. Otherwise, why go through with the renovations?" "Is that what I want?" "It's settled," he continued. "I'm bringing dinner and wine, and you don't need to do a thing. I'll be there by 7. "Okay, then. As long as you don't mind hanging out with a girl who's spent all day cleaning the bathroom floors." "There's no one I'd rather spend my evening with, as long as you keep your hands to yourself." I laughed. "Thanks." "On second thought, forget I said that. I'll just need to check them for germs first." I was still smiling when I heard the crunch of gravel in the driveway. I welcomed the pleasant clench in my chest as I thought about Crawford, his warm eyes, his slow grin, his rumpled clothes and hair. How was it possible that in this small space of time in Sweet Bay, my life had changed so remarkably? Every time my mind crept back to New Orleans, I forced myself to focus on what was in front of me rather than what waited for me in my real life. It was a trick I'd learned since I'd been back at the hideaway. Pretend to be the spontaneous, go-with-the-flow person I wished I was, and I could almost forget that I was going against the grain of my cautious, orderly life. He knocked, and I jumped up off the couch. When I got to the front door, I pulled it open and held my hands out. They're so clean you could eat off them, but it wasn't Crawford. Miss Jenkins, I hoped I'd find you here. Sammy Grevner, Middle Bay Land Development. My stomach dropped. I haven't seen you around the diner again, so I thought I'd come by for a little chat. Do you mind? He put his hand on the door and pushed. I do mind. I held on to the door firmly. If you need to talk to me about anything, we can do it out here. Although I can't imagine that we have anything to say to each other. Oh, there's plenty. He peered around me into the house. Clark was right. He said a lot's been going on around here, and I can see it. Looks good, Miss Jenkins. I hate to tell you it's all about to change. I crossed my arms over my chest. He raised an eyebrow. Allow me to explain. You're the owner of one of the choicest plots of waterfront property in Sweet Bay. I tried to tell you this when we spoke at the diner a couple of months ago. Only one other piece of property rivals yours in terms of desirability, but the owner has proven to be quite stubborn. With the unfortunate death of your grandmother and your refusal to sell, I've informed Mayor McLean that it's high time we get ourselves in gear and make some necessary changes. He trained his eyes on me, his round face red with heat and exertion, his hair matted down on top. My stomach tightened into a ball of knots, waiting for him to explain, but I wouldn't give him the satisfaction of appearing interested. I'll cut to the chase. My case to the mayor shows that this stretch of property serves no one but the hideaway's cornucopia of senior citizens. The area will better serve Sweet Bay and the entire county if it is developed into something a little more upstanding. I've always liked the idea of some fancy loft apartments. You know the kind. Industrial look, exposed pipes, metal railings, maybe some shops and restaurants underneath, and a nice boardwalk along the water to connect it all. With my plan in the works, Sweet Bay could rival other tourist destinations along the Gulf Coast. I've assured the mayor's staff that these changes would move us up substantially in the eyes of folks looking to spend vacation dollars. The mayor couldn't say yes fast enough. Mr. Grevner, please call me Sammy. Mr. Grevner, you've been trying to get your hands on this house for years, and my answer is the same as it was at the diner. You're not getting the house. Now, if you'll excuse me, a friend is coming over soon, and I'd prefer it if you didn't ruin our dinner. I tried to close the door, but he stuck a foot in the doorway. I opened it back up and sighed. He was a bothersome bug, a pest that wouldn't go away. You misunderstand me, Miss Jenkins. I don't want the house. I have no use for it. I want the house gone. Gone, I laughed. You can't do that. It's not your house to take. My voice sounded light, but inside bells were going off. Sammy had come around many times, but he'd never had a real plan, just a desire to take land out from under an old lady's nose. This time, it sounded like he'd done his homework. The mayor agrees with me that eminent domain is the right road to take. It's the first step in paving the way for our new Sweet Bay. I'll allow time for the residents to collect their things and make some plans, but do inform them that they should be quick. I don't have time for the Ingrams and the Greggs to sit around and bemoan their misfortune. We're all adults here, and this is how the world works. I'll stop by again with the necessary papers, but I wanted to let you know what's going on. This is impossible. I'm afraid it's very possible, he said with less bravado. You know, Miss Jenkins, many of the residents in this town think I'm slimy. They think I do nothing but twiddle my thumbs and wait for someone to die or run out of money so I can swing in and take the house. I raised an eyebrow. It's true. I do work that way sometimes, but this time it's different. This is all in the name of bettering our town of Sweet Bay. It was a lie, and we both knew it. He didn't care about Sweet Bay. All he cared about was the money a hot new development would put in his pocket. Inside, I was seething, but I couldn't let him see it. I had to talk to Mag's lawyer first. Are you finished? Yes, I... He cleared his throat. I'm finished. Do you have anything to add? Not a thing. I'll have my lawyer contact you in the morning. With the door closed, I let out a shaky breath. I pressed the heels of my hands over my eyes and then grabbed the phone off the dining table and walked to the back porch to call Crawford. The night couldn't have felt less like a victory if I'd walked off the end of the dock and fallen into the water. I'll have to take a rain check for tonight, I said when he answered. Why? What's wrong? I heard the concern in his voice. Mitch, or any of the men I dated in New Orleans, would have been on his phone the minute I bailed, looking for other friends to meet up with. Instead, Crawford gave me a chance to lighten the load Sammy had just dumped on my shoulders. I took a deep breath. What do you know about eminent domain? In the backyard, the sky was solid lilac, the sun long gone below the trees. The sun-warmed grass poked the bottoms of my bare feet. Without thinking, I did something I hadn't done since I was a young girl. I stretched out on the grass on my back, toes pointed, arms stretched out over my head, and stared up at the sky. After my parents died, I often came out into Mag's backyard just to lie down and think. As the stars popped out, I'd imagined they were holes, and my parents were up there peeking through the sky at me. I thought if I only stayed still long enough, I could catch all the love they dropped down. As Crawford had told me on the phone, there was no reason to jump to conclusions. Wait until you talk to Mr. Baines. See if Sammy's plans hold water. Then we'll figure it out, whatever it is. But what about all your work on the house? The painters are coming tomorrow, and the electrician is coming back in the afternoon to... Let me take care of the house. We can pause the work, if necessary, until we figure out what's going on. Most of the heavy lifting has already been done. The rest can wait. I hoped it would be just a simple wait and not a permanent ending. I rolled onto my side and looked up at the house. The lights inside gave the rooms a welcome glow. It sure didn't look like the neglected relic it had been when I first arrived. Was it possible Sammy could take it all away from me? Chapter 34. Sarah. July. I walked into Mr. Bain's office in Mobile the next day to find him swimming in paperwork. File folders and papers covered his desk and the floor surrounding it. His face, mottled and damp, showed the day had been a rough one. When he saw me in the doorway, he gestured to the paper-covered chair across from his desk. I wondered when I'd hear from you. I sat down, desperate for him to tell me Sammy had it all wrong. My buddy over at the courthouse called me late yesterday and told me the news. He said before I could even speak. He knew I'd been Mrs. Van Buren's lawyer and thought I'd want to know. It's harsh, but this type of thing does happen. Granted, usually it's to make way for a road expansion or railroad tracks, not something as trivial as condos and a boardwalk. But Sammy has the mayor's ear on this one. When he started chirping about tax dollars coming into the county and how that could change the face of Sweet Bay, the mayor turned to mush. So he can do this? It's really going to happen? Looks that way. Unless, of course, unless what? Mr. Bain sat back in his chair and clicked the end of his pen. You can try to challenge Sammy's right to take the property. We can go to trial, show them that the hideaway can be more than just a home for five, now four, people. That doesn't do much for the town. Would it do any good? He shook his head. I doubt it. It sounds like Sammy's nailed down all the loose ends. He's acting on the mayor's behalf, so it's legal for him to do it. His plan is to use the property for the good of the public, which always sounds good to a judge. Is making Suibei a tourist destination a good thing for the public? Is that what the people want? I couldn't imagine Suibei becoming glitzy and high class any more than I could imagine Mr. Bane sprouting horns in his head. He shrugged. People in small towns like to talk about keeping things the way they've always been, but when you start talking about what the influx of money could mean, better schools and parks, a beefed-up police department, things like that, you'd be surprised how quickly some people can give up that idea of small-town charm. Now, if you're up to it, he continued, you could try to convince them that the work you're doing on the house could better the town in similar ways, attracting vacationers from around the south or what have you. That doesn't have quite the same punch as multi-unit condos and high-end boutiques, but it's something. And it would appeal to the residents who will stand against anything Sammy tries to do just on principle alone. I must say, though, I was under the impression at the will reading that you were less than thrilled at being named the beneficiary of that place. I would think this might be a good thing for you, Sammy coming in and giving you a reason to let the house go. I wasn't thrilled at first, but things are a little different now. He nodded. I can see that. I closed my eyes and took a deep breath. Despite how I felt about the house now, was this a sign that Mag's death and Sammy's timely plan for the area was supposed to usher in the closing of the hideaway? Could anything make Sammy change his mind? It would have to be out of the goodness of his heart, and Sarah, I'm not sure there's much good in there. I wish I had something different to tell you. I'd advise you to begin making your exit plans. On the drive back to Suibei, my phone buzzed in my purse. I pulled it out with one hand and saw Crawford's name. Blood pumped in my ears as I pressed end and dropped the phone on the passenger seat. Don't push him away now, Sarah. But I didn't know what else to do. It felt like the hideaway was slipping through my fingers, the path in front of me leading back to my real life. At the house, so many trucks filled the driveway that I almost missed the motorcycle parked to the side under the oak. Two men with steers stamped on the backs of their sweat-stained shirts, struggled to fit the new stainless steel refrigerator through the front doorway. They'd taken the door off the hinges, but it still wouldn't fit. I avoided the commotion and walked around the side of the house. I found Alan reclining in a wooden Adirondack chair on the dock, a drink in his hand, his black boots and socks in a pile next to him. He'd propped his pale, skinny feet up on the railing. Glory sat next to him, laughing. Alan turned when the boards on the dock squeaked under my feet. Remind me why you ever left this place. It's so relaxing. I think I might move in, if that's okay with you, of course, he said to Glory. Of course it is. You can stay as long as you like, she patted his hand. I tried to smile, but my throat was tight. Oh, dear, Glory said, noticing. Alan stood to get a better look at me, and I hugged him hard. I'm so glad you're here, I whispered. He took a step back, then tightened his arms around me. Whoa, what's wrong with you? I let him go and wiped the corner of my eye. Nothing, I'm fine. I'm just happy to see you. What are you doing here? At the moment, Glory and I are getting acquainted. She told me a fascinating story about cutting Dolly Parton's hair back in Georgia. Glory held her thumbs up. I'll let you two kids talk. Let me know if you need anything, Alan. I'll be right inside. She walked back to the house and held the screen door so it wouldn't slam behind her. I turned back to Alan. I can't believe you. You've already got her eating out of your hand. It's the hairdressing bond. We're two of a kind. He sat back down in his chair and picked up his glass. Tell me what's going on. You tell me what's going on. If you're here, who's manning my shop? You didn't just close up, did you? I wouldn't do that to you. Don't worry, it's all taken care of. Rick was more than happy to hold the fort down until I get back tomorrow. Now, spill it. You're not a hugger, so something's up. Plus, you're about to cry, and you don't do that either. I sighed and sat down in Glory's chair. I just left the lawyer's office. It appears the VIPs of Sweet Bay feel that some fancy condominiums and a shiny new boardwalk would serve the people of Baldwin County better than the hideaway. So much better that they actually want to take the land and the house from me. VIPs of Sweet Bay, he shook his head. Who are they and how can they make that kind of decision? It's called eminent domain. The government, in this case acting under the urging of a land developer, can take this property, no questions asked, and turn it into something else for the good of the public. Alan waved his hand around until I stopped talking. Way over my head. I'll ask Jackson about it. Jackson? Who's that? He's a new friend. I raised an eyebrow. He's a lawyer. Very smart. Maybe he can help. I pinched the bridge of my nose with my fingers. Unfortunately, I think it's a slam dunk for the developer. Legally, he can do this, although ethically, it's pretty dirty. Plus, Mr. Baines has already looked into it. I don't need another lawyer. What I need is something to make this guy go away. He's actually taking the house from you? And what, tearing it down? I nodded. How long do you have before all this happens? I don't know yet. We sat in silence. Alan handed me his glass of tea and I took a sip. Everything was going so well. I laughed, but it was only to keep the tears at bay. The house is coming along, and it's going to be gorgeous. The thought had even crossed my mind that I might be able to run this place as a B&B. I'd keep bits and pieces, obviously, and I couldn't move here, not fully anyway. But maybe I could do both. Crawford and I, well, like you said, Sweet Bay and New Orleans aren't that far apart. I leaned back in the chair and tilted my face toward the sun. So much has happened here. I just can't imagine it all ending now, and at the hands of Sammy, which makes it even worse. I closed my eyes and forced my thoughts of William, the house, and all those pieces of furniture engraved with a skeleton key into a deep pocket in the back of my mind. It's probably a good thing this happened now, I said, willing my voice not to shake before I make any big changes in my life to accommodate this house. Sammy will raise it, throw up some atrocious condo building, and that'll be that. I'll head back to New Orleans and do what I'm supposed to be doing, and things will go on in Sweet Bay like they have been for years, except now it'll be filled with snowbirds and spring breakers. Even with my eyes closed, I could feel Alan staring at me. I sat up and took another sip of tea, forcing myself to look calm. What about Crawford? He asked. He said we'd figure it out. Alan waited, but he dropped the subject when I didn't offer more. It's beautiful here, a little quaint, he glanced around, but I could sit on this dock all day. It's so quiet, I think I can hear the fish breathing. That's just because the construction guys are wrapping up for the day. Construction guys? He grinned. Maybe you need to show me around. After a 10-cent tour, during which Alan was disappointed to discover that most of the workers had indeed left for the day, we ended up in the driveway next to his Harley. He handed me a helmet. I brought an extra in case I needed to rescue you. Rescue me from what? Doesn't matter. You don't need to be rescued. You're doing just fine, and we'll figure out what to do about this house and your man. I just need to do it over something stronger than sweet tea. Hop on. With no energy to argue, I did as he asked. I directed him to the outrigger lounge, the only white tablecloth place in Sweet Bay. The tablecloths were white vinyl, but in Sweet Bay, that counted. We sat at a table on the patio overlooking the bay. Alan ordered white wine for both of us, along with fried pickles and a plate of oysters Bienville. What? He asked when I looked at him over the top of my menu. If you're going to stay here, I need to make sure the food is up to par. Stay here? Did you not hear me tell you everything about Sammy? I heard you. Tell me about Crawford. Crawford is wonderful, almost too wonderful, considering. Considering what? Even if I had considered staying in Sweet Bay, which I haven't, I might not even be able to. If the house falls through, I wouldn't have the option of staying. Of course you have the option. You're a big girl. You can do whatever you want. More than that, I'd say he gives you a pretty good reason to stay. A reason to stay, Was that what I was looking for? But what am I supposed to do? Go buy a house? I have the shop and clients and the Broussard's house coming up. It's not like I could just forget all that and move to Sweet Bay. You're overthinking this. We don't know how it will all play out. I dipped a fried pickle in ranch dressing, then dropped it and leaned back in my chair. What? He asked. I haven't been back home that long, but Sweet Bay was starting to feel, I don't know what it was feeling like, just something different than it did when I was younger. I think I was starting to like it. Did you hear what you just said? You just called Sweet Bay home. I did? Alan nodded. Maybe it's that it feels like life here could be different a second time around. But you know how much I love the shop, and you, and New Orleans. Of course I do. But you've opened the door to a whole other part of your life. The house, your memories of Mags, those crazy old people living in the house now. Crawford, he said, tilting his head. This isn't small stuff. And it's okay to feel pulled in two different directions. Sounds like my therapist just jumped in the conversation. He waved the thought away. That's why you pay me the big bucks. But you never finished telling me about Mag's things you found in the house. I pieced everything together as best I could. Mag's privileged life and marriage to Robert, Robert leaving to be with another woman, and Mag's moving to the hideaway and meeting William. For reasons that made sense to him at the time, and I think due in part to Mag's parents, William left. He planned to come back for her, but it never happened, and he never knew she was pregnant. So, little Mag's had some secrets. Yes, but it's more than that, I said. By the time she was my age, she was a widow and in love with a man she'd never see again. But despite all that, she was content, or she seemed so. She loved her friends and her old house, gave the neighbors something to talk about, and never cared about how a woman of her age should live her life. She was brave. Sounds like it, Alan said. Maybe she worried I would have thought badly of her if I'd known all this. Would you have? No, just the opposite. It would have shown me there was a reason for her oddness, that she was much more than just the strange old lady I always thought. You think she was strange because of what happened with William? I don't get it. Not William, but Robert. And maybe even her parents, too. From what I'm gathering, Mags was raised to be proper and ladylike, to always do the right thing, even to marry the right man. I'm thinking maybe she got to Sweet Bay and ditched all that. Maybe she went in the total opposite direction from what her parents and Robert represented. I thought of her crazy hats and bright yellow ponchos that made me want to crawl under the nearest rock when I was a teenager. What if all that quirkiness had just been her way of pushing back against a lifestyle and culture that crushed her dreams? It all makes perfect sense now. I flagged the waitress and ordered another glass of wine. The sun was setting. Long, thin clouds, now dark purple against the orange sky, draped across the sky like streamers. I drove by my old house last week, I said. My parents' old house. We'd started on our entrees, blackened gulf snapper for Alan, grilled mahi wrap for me. How did that feel? Alan asked. Strange, I guess. I hadn't seen it in a really long time, 10 years at least. It's white now. It used to be light blue. But my old wooden swing was still hanging from the oak in the front yard. Two kids were playing on it. My mom always hated that swing. I busted my forehead on it when I was little. I pointed to a spot above my right eyebrow. Had to get 4 stitches right here. Alan smiled. You've never told me much about your parents. Your mom. What was she like? I sat back and readjusted the clip in my hair. She was kind, soft-spoken. It was like she was put on earth to do exactly what she was doing, being my mom. Ed Jenkins' wife, owner of the side of the road diner. And she was always good at accepting people and situations for who and what they were. Like with Mags. She had to have known her own mother led an unconventional life, but she took her for who she was without being bothered by any of it. Or maybe she was bothered and you just never knew. You were still young when she died, right? I nodded. Maybe she kept that part from you.
Maybe. I remembered Mom's calm demeanor, her contentment with her life and everything around her. With me beating a trail out of Sweet Bay as soon as I could, maybe I was as unlike Mom as I was Mags.
You're the same way, you know, Alan said after a pause. Or at least you were with me. I walked into your shop with green hair and a ring in my nose, and you didn't even flinch.
I squinted an eye and held up my thumb and forefinger a centimeter apart, maybe just a little.
He laughed and nudged my chair with his foot.
For a moment, we ate in comfortable silence. From a table across the deck, laughter came in bursts. A flock of pelicans coasted overhead.
You're not really going to leave, are you? Alan asked. We'd finished our meal and were waiting to pay our bill.
I traced my finger along the top of my empty wine glass, my third, two more than I usually drank.
It seems like you have a lot of unfinished business here, he continued. You've only just met William. You have a hot romance of your own to deal with, and you need to look further into this emergent domain thing. Eminent domain. Whatever. See if it's a done deal.
I sighed. I told you, Mr. Baines has already figured it out.
It would take a change of heart for Sammy to give up the property, and that's not going to happen.
Maybe. It's just a shame to lose such a fabulous house. I wish we could relocate it to New Orleans. It could be our hideaway when we need to escape annoying customers.
It was an attempt to lighten the mood, but I didn't feel light. My head throbbed and I was exhausted. He looked across the table and saw it.
Let's get you home. He pulled me to my feet.
At the house, Alan dropped our helmets in the yellow room, the one he had picked out during our earlier tour of the house. The painters hadn't yet reached the bedrooms, so they still boasted those original lovely color schemes. He helped me to the blue room, and I curled up on the bed while he tugged off my shoes. Just before he turned the light off, my cell phone rang. He fished it out of my purse and looked at the screen.
Crawford, he said.
Not now. I'll call him in the morning.
He sighed. Does he know about the house?
I nodded, my eyes already closing. I told him last night.
You're going to involve him in all this, right?
If this thing between the two of you is as meaningful as you say it is, you can't just ditch him and slip out of Sweet Bay. That would be the easy road, and you can't take the easy one this time.
This time? I opened my eyes. My brain was foggy, but his words cut through the muck.
Something has changed in you since you've been here, and it's more than just Mags. I think Crawford is part of it. Don't cut him out yet.
But what did you mean about this time?
He shook his head and stood up from the bed. Look, you left Sweet Bay a long time ago when things were hard. Believe me, I'm glad you did. But you do have a tendency to skip out on the rough parts. It'll be messy if Sammy goes through with this plan and you have to figure out what to do with everything you've started here. But don't cut and run. I pulled the sheets up tighter under my chin, fending off his words. It annoyed me to admit it, but he was right, as usual.
One more thing, he said from the end of the bed. You shut your heart down too much, which is infuriating. But when you do open up, all of us, me, Crawford, Glory, and her gang downstairs, we can't help but love you. You're magnetic in your own twisted little way, and I think you got that from Mags. These people attached themselves to her and her house, and all these years later, they're still here because they still love her. Listen to Mags, to who she really was, before you make any decisions about the house.